Hear that? It's the sound of you catching up on all the latest and greatest fintech news, trends, and updates thanks to Streetworthy, Yield Street's bi-weekly newsletter. Stay in the know with CEO Milind Mahiri as he takes a closer look at what's happening in the fintech space, then breaks down what each story could mean for investors like you. Give your portfolio the edge it deserves and subscribe to Streetworthy on LinkedIn today.
Welcome to The Yield, the official podcast of Yield Street. Every week, we bring you the latest market insights across our asset classes and products from subject matter experts. Our aim is to break the outdated mold of investing and help you add financial fuel to your ambitions through innovative investing products and strategies typically unavailable to most investors. Realize your next level with The Yield. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. The views you are about to hear do not necessarily reflect the views of Yield Street. This podcast is intended to be strictly informational and is not intended to be and should not be construed as a research report, investment advice, or the offer or sale of securities or any investment product. Now, let's get into the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a bonus episode of The Yield. This is our first Tech Talk of the year. We haven't done this in a while. I think the last one we did was in November of 2021. So it's super exciting to be back here and talk a little bit about what happens behind the scenes in fintech startups. So without further ado, I'm absolutely honored and thrilled to introduce Sanket Pathak, who is the founder and CEO of SynapseFi, one of the leading financial infrastructure providers. So welcome, Sanket. So thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Are we going to spend the next 45 to 50 minutes talking about flat files? Well, we'll talk about a bunch of other things as well, but flat files is
only talking about flat files.
Sanket's only going to be talking about flat files, but I'll try to talk about a few other things as well. He might keep bringing the conversation back to flat files, so we'll see how it goes.
Fintech runs on flat files. If I ran for the president, that would be
yeah,
my agenda.
All your posters will
that's
be
it.
Yeah. Vote for flat files. There you
That's
go.
It.
You should get the Twitter handle at flat files right now.
Dude, I should totally do
totally
that.
Do it. But I'd love to start. But before we get into all the fun stuff, do check us out on yieldstreet.com. We have a bunch of very interesting offerings open and we launch at least two, maybe usually more every week. If you are an originator who's looking to raise some capital to our platform, please email us at originations@yieldstreet.com or you can go to yieldstreet.com/raise-capital. And we are happy to help you do that through our platform. So Sanket, I'd love to hear founder stories, especially when companies start from some interesting personal challenge that identifies a need that you decide to fulfill. So, and I know you have a very compelling one, much like our own founder. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, when I came to America, I couldn't open up a bank account.
I remember that.
It didn't bother me as much the first time. I still remember I was too shy to ask any of my friends to drive me to Bank of America. So I walked there and then I had to have my university call them and say, yeah, he's studying here. And they opened an account for me. And I thought that was fine. I was like, look, you moved to a new country. It's okay. You have the challenges initially. 3 years later, I was in a hackathon and I tried to sign up for Simple. And
Simple, I remember those guys.
Yeah. Simple, like the OG neobank. They denied me.
The little white card they had.
Yeah. And it looked pretty good. It actually looked pretty compelling. I was downloading, I downloaded Coinbase. And I wasn't even trying to sign up for a bank account. I was just trying to take inspiration for the hackathon because I was at a hackathon. Could not sign up for Simple while my friend Thomas, he just signed up for it
right
like
on, yeah.
10 seconds. And that time it kind of bothered me. I thought I was here now, but it seemed like I really wasn't. There was still a disparity.
Right.
And then I got really fixated about getting this card.
I want that shiny white card.
Yeah. Which it seems like everyone is. It seemed like the debit card craze. Makes sense. I think there's this like feeling about owning something tangible, and I think
that
comes from it. So then literally in next 2 days I started building the nuts and bolts of a neobank. I started building Simple, but when I went to be like, okay, well, I think I have the app. Now, how do I actually issue a card? It turned out there was no way to open up a bank account easily still.
Right.
I talked to a couple of banks that took me semi-seriously, but there was no way. And I got lucky. I found some people who got some of the banks to take me seriously. And I launched the first version of Synapse, which was just a closed loop account. So it was just, I could send money to you. You could send money to me.
It's kind of like a Venmo sort of thing.
It was literally like Venmo.
Yeah.
But where we found product market fit was the restaurant industry, because restaurants
point of sale,
hated interchange fees.
Who likes them, really?
I love them now.
Of course you do.
For the record, thank you, MasterCard. back then, didn't like them. And we were like, well, this is a great way to be able to acquire customers. The only issue is restaurant purchases are impulse purchases. No one's really funding their account to be able to do a restaurant transaction. So even though we saw a lot of uptake, like we had like 100 plus restaurants in Memphis. Mm-hmm. Apple Pay was scared of us because we were acquiring restaurants faster than
they were. That's where you went to school, in Memphis?
Yeah. But the transaction volume wasn't high enough. And then I met a couple of folks that were like, if you could give us the store values and API, we'd love to embed this in our system. And I was like, well, kind of screw it. Like, it's not that we're getting a lot of transactions the other way. Let's try this. And it worked really well. We did like more transactions in a day than we had done in a month, in like a month from then. And then we got more and more customers.
That sounds like a little bit of a hockey stick.
Huh? Yeah.
It's crazy. So it literally started off as A, inability to open a bank account, and B, an actual hackathon project.
Yeah. It was a serious coding project. This wasn't anything else. Yeah.
Oh, and is there any part of that original hackathon code base that's still inside the Synapse code base right now? It's okay if it is.
Yeah. I think so. I think version two of it, a lot of it is still there. Because in version two, what I learned was every single fintech company wants a nuanced customer identification program.
Yeah.
So we built that pretty early. And you know, that's evolved since then. Like, y'all use it. But that was at the very foundation of Synapse. One thing that I'll tell you this, I've never told this story before. Another thing that Synapse had behind the scenes was what ended up being my graduate school thesis project, just to get University of Memphis off my back that I wasn't on campus because I was in San Francisco by then, was a white paper called BitUSD. And behind the scenes, what Synapse had was a dollar-to-dollar collateralized hash token that sounds, you could transmit.
That sounds awfully like cryptocurrency.
It sounds like stablecoin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back then, nobody knew what stablecoin was. We didn't know what stablecoin was. But I thought the crypto that was most intriguing was something that was pegged by some collateral.
Is that white paper out there somewhere we can read?
Totally.
Send it to me. I would love to read that.
Yeah. I think one of the early employees of Synapse, Lawson, tweeted it.
I remember Lawson.
A few years ago. Yeah. He tweeted that a few years ago. But that was at the core of Synapse. That I ditched in version two because I was like, it seems more complicated than what's needed.
You kept the tech stack, but you just ditched the code. You're still Python. You were Python then.
Totally. Yeah.
I love Python. Don't get me wrong. But like, I'm very curious. So obviously, like, you know, finance, building any kind of digital product on top of a decades old. Oh,
can I just interrupt?
Yeah, please.
You know what's still in from version one?
Tell me.
Flat file converter.
I knew it. Okay. Audience, please note this is the first meandering to flat files, which we'll get to. But tell me, so that's actually a great segue into what I was going to ask, flat files.
Yeah.
So the underpinnings of the financial industry, the global financial industry, is mainframes from the 60s and 70s, which, as you obviously worked on flat files, you had to feed them with, like, you know, fixed length, delimited strings that only the computer knew how to. What was that? So there is obviously the technical chops to build an app, a digital app.
Yeah.
But integrating with a technology foundation that is decades old and works in flat files. Was that, first of all, was that the beginning of your love affair with flat files? And what was that whole process to discover how does this industry work? Who do you have to, what was that process like for you? The discovery process of what needs to be done?
Yeah, I learned outside in, right? So I was like, I need to do something and how do I do it?
Right.
It was less so, I know all these things to do. What can I build with it? Right. So Yeah, I didn't know all of financial services ran on flat files. So that was new.
Did you have resources that you could, like, people or, you know, actual, sorry, if people are wondering what I'm looking at, I'm just looking at questions that might be coming in, so I don't miss any.
About flat files.
About flat files. Yeah. So these are public, but are they matter of public knowledge? Like, what does an ACH, a NACHA file look like?
Totally.
What like? So yeah. We can just...
Yeah, it's completely open. Anyone can read it. It's like one of those things that is publicly available, but very hard to understand.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, the CIA document on kind of like aliens or something like that. Those things are out there, but they're very hard to understand and decipher. That is also true with the NACHA guidebook. It's there. It's about 1,000 pages or so.
I've tried to read it.
Yeah. It's very boring.
Ago. Yeah.
I read the whole thing.
Oh, I guess... you probably didn't have a choice, did you? If you had to actually build software that interacted with the protocol, you would have to.
Yeah.
So in the course of reading that, you have like almost like shocking moments, like, really? That's how it works? Kind of moments? Or is it just like, oh, okay, this makes sense.
I mean, the whole thing was shocking.
The fact that it's...
Yeah, the whole thing was shocking. I thought... And again, just to contextualize this, before Synapse, I'd built some side projects and like I used the Twitter APIs and all these different things.
Right.
So I thought like it's going to be some like applet in Java with an XML applets. API.
Yeah.
But I didn't think it was just going to be SFTP uploads of a flat file, which, hey, if you, I was actually relieved because it's easier to deal with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking as a programmer, absolutely. Yeah. The thing that I always have kind of, and we've talked about this before, the world is moving to, as not even moving, it's already moved onto an instant, real-time, I mean, RTP. Everything has like instant, but Instagram, InstaPay, real-time payments, which conceptually is antithetical to the idea of file-based data exchange.
Totally. Because,
so how do you, what was... What's the kind of mechanisms that you have deployed and companies like yours have deployed to kind of bridge that gap between what is essentially a batch asynchronous, far from real-time process to a real-time, to a set of consumers and users who are expecting everything to be in real-time?
I think other companies have tried to make things seem more real-time than maybe Synapse has.
Okay.
I don't think my goal has ever been speed of payment. I think my goal has always been giving people access to financial services that have never had before. And being an immigrant, I've always thought maybe waiting for a day is okay. Like, it's fine. But even to be able to build the system, to your point, in a way where you can onboard a user instantly, you can get verified in about 5 seconds or less. I think that's important in mostly all cases. Exceptions are there. Get them set up with a deposit account, enable them to fund that account relatively quickly so that even if the payment lands in next day and a half or two, most of the work from the user is done. They get a push notification and they're happy about it.
Right.
It takes a lot of work. And one thing that I did not appreciate, which I had no insight into appreciating, is prototyping is very easy in software.
Yep.
Scaling is massively difficult. It's very easy to add a new feature, right? Like Synapse could do almost anything in financial services as a prototype, right? If you gave us like 30 days, anything, like anything you can think of in 30 days, engineers can build. Scale is very hard.
I hope my engineers are hearing that.
Well, what they'll come back and tell you is, like I can prototype this. Is this compliant? Does it scale? What are the edge cases? And it's super difficult.
That's the other kind of side of the world that we live in, fintech, where yes, it's old technology that we are putting some new cloaks on, whether it's APIs or WebSockets or anything that we are changing the temporality of. Like, okay, well, you need to make a payment. I'm going to, instead of waiting for that whole payment to be executed between point A and point B, I'm going to just pre-fund point A and then recover it.
To
simulate a real time. But the other thing is exactly what you said. It's a regulated space.
Yeah.
What was that discovery like? And I know Lawson was, as a lawyer, he was one of your original founders, co-founders. Yeah, yeah. How did you navigate the regulatory landscape of the space to actually build Synapse? Because that must have been a fun journey as well. Fun being in air quotes.
The honest truth is, Brian Lawson and I were just learning all of this. And we thought we were the odd ducks. Mm-hmm. It turned out everybody was. Like, no one really knew what does this open banking system really look like, because we didn't really have a construct of we're going to white label financial products and sell it to customers. So you had to really learn everything.
Right.
And you all, in some cases, you also had to like build governance that didn't exist, like platform onboarding. What does that really look like?
Yeah.
What all should you look into before you risk rate a platform? A lot of things had to be invented. They didn't just exist. And it seems like even now, a lot of this information is not public knowledge, right? So
yeah,
I'm shocked by a couple of things that people do outside. And I'm like, in 6 months, you won't be able to do this. Here's why. And the big reason for that is, look, they're doing the same thing, right? Yeah. They're kind of learning. Now, one thing I will add into all of this, one of the great learnings that I had around flat files construct, which is the NACHA specifications playbook, the amount of edge cases that were documented in there over the years and decades is massive.
What's an example of an edge case, for instance? Like
every single new payment type is an edge case. Right? Why do you have to do PPD, CCD, Web, TXP, all these different formats?
Those are a bunch of letters. I don't know what they mean, but I'm sure
they're all there for legitimate reasons.
Yeah.
And when you start learning that, you realize, oh, over time, this flat file evolved into.
Yeah, someone's just adding an extra code and like, you know.
That's it.
Yeah.
And then, but what that's really telling you is, oh, these are all the various ways you people want to move money in this one flat file format. And they somehow figured out how to do it.
Yeah.
Is this the most technically brilliant thing? Probably not. Yeah. But it got the job done. And I think that's maybe like my underlying wisdom that I learned in fintech is, or just financial technologies is, there's a lot of stuff you discover as you start doing this.
Or then you suddenly encounter a weird exception in your production environment. It's like, oh, wait a minute, that's an interesting thing. Yeah. That's so,
including evolution of regulations.
That was actually, I'm looking at my little cheat sheet here. That was the next thing.
Oh.
So actually it's a little further down, but since you brought it up, so there is being on top of changing regulation, particularly true right now with all of the bit of a wild west, that's the world of cryptocurrencies and crypto and digital currencies in general. There is just staying on top of it and understanding how it affects A, your business, B, the technology that you built, like for instance, a new code. But there is also an element of maybe we as pioneers in the field or some of the leaders in the field, a company like Synapse can influence that as well.
Yeah.
So is that something that you have found the need to do or you know, actually trying to shape regulation around a somewhat semi-regulated or unregulated parts of the industry that might help
in
a positive way?
At the core of it, we've always done some of that. We've done some of that in our universe. This is the first year where I've started thinking about, do we need to have a larger dialogue?
Right.
And I think we should. I think we need to have a larger dialogue. So we're hiring some folks just to be able to have a larger dialogue on this. But as it comes to Synapse, I'll give you a couple of examples, right?
Yeah.
We started dabbling in crypto indirectly since the existence of the company. Like one of our first five customers were a crypto exchange.
Like BitUSC, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that as well. One of the things we collaboratively came up with as we onboarded them was, how can we build a customer identification program that reduces some of the noise around, hey, crypto is for criminals. And a big piece of that was collecting social security, a government ID, and a selfie.
Yeah.
Synapse was the first platform who did that. And then it literally became the de facto standard for every single cryptocurrency.
Like entire companies that do just that.
Just that.
Yeah.
So we literally started doing that, and we did that with Buttercoin, who was an exchange back in the day, Kraken, who's still an exchange, Bitfinex. We worked with Coinbase for a bit as well. Coinbase was doing it by then themselves, right? But a lot of that stuff came from because a couple of us got together and we were like, hey, how do we onboard customers a whole lot better? And crypto has some nuances and you need to be able to do it a little differently.
Yeah.
Not prompted by regulators, but just to be able to do this a little bit more proactively. Now, there are some places where we do that well. I'm sure there are places where we don't do it well, right? Like, it's not, no one's perfect. But the intention is there. We do care about that piece.
And the other thing, like, which is kind of related to regulation, but let's say it's kind of like roughly in the same zip code, is risk.
Yeah.
Nacha, our favorite protocol and favorite flat file of all, has not the file itself, but the protocol has some interesting, I mean, I literally call it the Swiss cheese of protocols. It's so easy because of the lengthy amount of time over which a single transaction, the simple lifetime of a transaction of like, what is it? 90 days, 60 days, 60 days.
You can, in some cases, even later.
I'll accept that. Okay. Well, these protocols and the flat files are still very useful.
Yeah.
But there are some things that do need to, I would believe, do need to change in a way that protects the users whose money is being handled by these old protocols from a fraud and risk standpoint.
Yeah.
What do you think, what is Synapse doing, and what are your personal thoughts on evolution of these protocols to actually address the kind of marrying the risk aversion to but that part and the real-timeness part of it? Like, you know, I want speed, but I want to be safe.
Yeah.
And how do we reconcile those two?
Yeah. I think let's break two things, well, three things separately, and then let's focus on the fraud piece. Let's put identity verification aside, because who you say you are is a different topic. And people don't realize there's a different reason why you do it. It's not about financial fraud.
Yeah.
There's a different reason.
It's about impersonation. Basically.
It's just impersonation.
Yeah.
It's definitely, it helps with financial theft, but there's a whole different thing. So let's put that aside.
Sure.
Then let's put a mutual activity reporting aside, which are turned into suspicious activity reports. These are things like money laundering, terrorist financing.
Yeah.
So then let's just focus on one of the most painful things for consumers, because that's what we're focused on for a second, not regulators or politicians. The most painful thing for our customer is either losing money or losing money two ways, because somebody hacked their account and stole their money.
Right.
Or they thought they got paid for something and it turned out they didn't.
Yeah.
So now the question is, at the core of it, that is a real pain point for customers.
Absolutely.
And I think architecturally there are two ways to resolve this. To your point, Nacha does not account for this. You could technically put any account number, any routing number in a Nacha file and process it.
Yeah. But you can recall it later.
Yeah. Now there are multiple ways to be able to solve for this problem. And I have my own biases, and I'll tell you how I think this should be done as well.
Sure.
There's a network-based way to be able to solve the problem. SEPA is a good example of this. Only push payments are allowed. And then the contemplation is you're going to do good authentication on top so that when the money gets pushed out, it gets pushed out, and that's that. So a network could just decide we're not going to do pulls altogether, or we're only going to do pull requests that still have to be approved by the customers. Now, contextualize that with, here's what's happening now. You're sending two messages versus one.
Yeah.
So instead of just saying debit the account, you're saying, can I debit the account? And the response comes back as yes or no. Which, to contextualize, when Nacha was built, was too much computation. Now you doubled your volume.
Yeah.
Without actually doubling financial movement.
And this is at a time when things like bandwidth were a premium, or even processing power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The second thing you can do is essentially add native support for tokenization.
Right.
Which is every single time there's a unique account number that gets sent for every single request.
Mm-hmm.
And the network by default supports that. Apple Pay is a good abstraction of that on the credit card space, which is when I use my wallet, my phone, It generates a unique card number with keys that are co-shared between Apple and the issuer processor.
Yeah.
And you're getting a unique card number, but you know behind the scenes what card number this really belongs to. Wells Fargo is starting to do some of that with account aggregation, right? Again, they don't do a one-time use. It's for a platform, right? So
Yield Street
would get their own. Nomad
Apple One
will
does
get
that
their
too,
own.
I think, now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So a couple of them are starting to do that. And the final piece is maybe add more real-time approval into the part of the process that probably cannot happen at the network level, but can happen at the user level, which is how do they sign up into an application? How do they really end up moving the money forward? Do they accept payments? Do they reject payments? All these different things that they can do, that a consumer can act on their own accord to be able to kind of like, every single transaction has to have a facial authentication done or
fingerprint. Yeah, it's done. And this is the thing. So there are these things, like when you do an Apple Pay payment, you're getting that biometric identification. Yeah. So there is that.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it make sense for these to just be open standards that are portable? So you're not like, you know, I don't know if they are actually. I'm absolutely admitting ignorance here, but like what Apple Pay does, I just love the idea that my actual credit card number is invisible. It's like it's all a one-time hash. You know?
Yeah. Yes, it's the only issue is there are some use cases where this works really well, and there are some use cases where this does not work really well. Here's a good example of this. You go into business banking and you start talking about account operators and account owners and what thresholds who has to be able to move money where. So now it comes to my bias. My bias is, I don't think, and this is going to be controversial, but I don't think the issue is the network.
Well, I'll buy that.
I think they can stay as is.
Yeah.
I do think the issue is who gets access to the network and how. I think the governance standard is if you're a bank, you have access to the network. If you're not, you don't. I think that needs to change.
Isn't that what things like blockchain are attempting to change anyway, to decentralize that?
Differently, because what they're doing is they're essentially saying now anyone can have access to this.
Yeah, right.
What I'm saying is regulated access. If we were to rebuild this whole thing, and let's say I was one of the people who had an opinion, the opinion I would share is there needs to be a certification process built on top of various networks and approvals you can get into it. And every single network could have their own standard that they'd really want to maintain and maybe have more private networks as well, which is hard to do today. And that's where I think Bitcoin and blockchain can help.
Yeah, because that's, I agree. So it's trying to solve a known problem of centralization with a completely opposite model. But what you're saying is that the ideal solution lies somewhere in the middle.
The ideal solution probably lies on top of blockchain as the operating system, but an abstracted L2, L3 layer that is more compliant. I will tell you exactly what I mean. You can take Solana and you can build any token on top of Solana. Same is true with Ethereum or Polkadot, right? Okay, let's say we come up with a Fed USD token.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to my college research paper.
I got to read that, man.
Yeah, I'll send it. The idea is there needs to be federated access that says, okay, these are the standards you have to abide by. You can submit your application for us to review. And by the time you meet the standards, we will approve your application who now has access to the operating system of Fed USD coin on top of Solana. Let's just say that, which is just a smart contract. But it's being governed by a centralized body who's a little bit more modern and understands cybersecurity, understands authentication, understands actually consumer pain points. Sure, you can sanction Ukraine and Russia. Great, you can do that. But that's something else. Like, this is about consumer security and consumer protection.
Of course, yeah.
And quantifiably, that's where I think we're headed, which is you're going to have USDC is a good example of this. You're going to have USDC that Circle operates, and Circle over time is going to build governance and standards around who gets access to the operating system, which is USDC. No more different than Apple App Store. And you're going to be able to operate an interface in that environment. Now, I am of the opinion some of them are going to be privatized, USDC, and some of them hopefully government entities are going to launch as well.
So like I had a question that I wanted to ask you, but I think you just actually answered that. So let me, if I had to TLDR that and bring it back to flat files again, the question was this, like, do you see a future where the plumbing, AKA flat files themselves, are replaced? But what I'm hearing you saying is that there's nothing wrong with flat files. They're great, but there is this layer of middleware that needs to be built with modern technology to actually make the fact that it's running with flat files and older technology irrelevant to the problem that we're trying to solve. Does that kind of sum it up? Or
I think what I'm saying is what the flat files are trying to do is different.
Yeah.
What flat files are trying to do is enable money movement.
It's just moving money around.
And yeah. It's a primitive.
Yeah.
A primitive doesn't equal to application. Application is a collection of a bunch of primitives.
Mm-hmm.
So the engineer in me says, don't touch the flat file. Just make it far better in the sense that build out the right abstraction on top of it so that you can convert a JSON to a flat file very easily.
Yeah.
Or maybe have a flat file that is a JSON file.
It's a file.
Right? It's a file. Isn't it? Yeah. Have that be one of the primitives, and the other primitives are around authentication,
right?
Request validation, and so on. And then let applications mix and match what needs to be done. And then whoever the governing body is decides what kinds of permutations are allowed and what kinds of permutations are right.
Do you see this governing body kind of like a cross, like a global body like NATO or UN, or is it like, does every country, every, I mean, this is kind of like just we're thinking, but what's the ideal state there? Like, I mean, we have the IMF, we have the World Bank. Is it someone like that? Although they're not, that's not their charter right now, but is that something that someone like that could take on?
I think it looks like a consortium for sure.
Right. So I was thinking, yeah.
Hoping consortium of private companies, because there's a sense of urgency and an incentive structure that is much different in a private company than there is in a governing body that is non-private, built by government entities. I think government supervision is helpful. They should be setting the rules, but probably not operating them.
Yeah, I think that's a key point, like where because of the significantly technologically advanced world in which these transactions are happening, the legislation that's being written around them needs to be written by people who actually understand the world better. Yeah. Like, you know, because otherwise you cannot, fine, you can still use older flat files, but you cannot bring older ways of defining regulation to something that just fundamentally works very differently and in a very different fashion.
Yeah.
So you've conquered Nacha. What's the next flat file that Synapse is planning to tackle?
Well, for the record, Synapse does Nacha.
You do more than Nacha.
We do more.
Yeah.
We do Fedwire now in a flat file. Now we do Swift ISO X9 for checks, RPPS for bill pay. And
okay, so I'm counting 5, 6. I think we're up to 6 now.
Yeah, and then we do ISO messages as single message formats for issuing, processing, and then also reconciliation, which comes in as a flat file.
Yeah,
and about to do RTP. So I think we've kind of graduated from flat files.
Yeah. So let's. I do want to talk a little bit about RTP because it's. As you know, we've been partners in our respective company journeys for a while now, and RTP is obviously Yield Street being a consumer platform, our primary and secondary and tertiary focus, and several other focuses after that is going to be on providing our investors the least friction, but at the same time most secure. Experience on the platform, whether it's investing or moving money into the platform, withdrawing money back to their wallets, or any of the range of features that we have and plan to have or add over the next months. So the question is, what can we as both the technology provider, infrastructure provider, and the experience provider, how can we best collaborate to make this a reality for the people that we're trying to help?
I think RTP is great because people can receive their money in real time.
Right.
I think it can also be bad if it turns out I can hack into your account much easier and push money out.
Right.
Or if it turns out I had already hacked into your account and I funded the wallet with, Lawson's account. And at Wells Fargo, because I hacked into his account as well. And now I'm pushing money into my account.
Exactly. So balancing that. Yeah.
And this brings us back to the two pieces that I'd put aside before, which essentially is around one, getting really good at identity verification. So that's being the first big piece, because I think it has benefits across when I'm in your account now, even though your identity has been verified, I link an account that is not yours.
Yeah.
You have a higher likelihood of detecting that than before. Versus if like you didn't, Yield Street didn't know this, like, are you who you say you are? Mm-hmm. So I think that helps the problem. And this is where kind of like a lot of the vendors also conflate the issue. Identity verification helps reduce the likelihood of identity theft.
Not financial fraud.
Not financial fraud.
Yeah.
And helps you do sanction screenings far better because now for you sure, know exactly yeah. who this person is. But here's the piece that Yield Street and Synapse can do better together. Keeping that matter aside still, looking at the transaction usage and the life cycle of the user and mm-hmm. saying, did the pattern all of a sudden change based on what they were doing?
Yeah.
Or is this new user acting in known ways of double spending fraudulent behavior that we've seen before?
Mm-hmm.
And based on that, providing the right safeguards. Safeguards are limit reduction, maybe closing off some instruments for a while, aka don't allow RTP until the user is not in the yellow zone anymore, and then allow it.
I'm gonna use that as a cue to pitch a feature, which we've talked about actually, yeah. is I think you use a very important keyword there, pattern,
yeah.
because ultimately to prevent unhealthy movements of money or unhealthy movements of anything really, but we're yeah. talking about money here. We need to identify that as an outlier from a standard pattern, totally. Right? Now, that can be a user level thing, which of course we can build patterns for and totally. We do.
Yeah.
But also on a macro scale, what are some of the typical patterns of money movement that signify a potential for something unhealthy happening?
Yeah.
Which requires a much bigger corpus of data, which technology providers, infrastructure providers like Synapse have,
yeah.
and you can deploy any number of data scientists on that to yeah. actually say, okay, well, and I think it'd be great to hear like what is Synapse doing to actually yeah. tap into this massive wealth of which we don't have. We have the data yeah. from our own user base, of course, but
yeah.
we don't have the cross-tenant anonymized user data set that the companies like Synapse or like yours yeah. have.
Yeah, I'll tell you exactly what we're doing architecturally in. With the hopes being, hopefully someone finds it valuable and they can do it as an independent company as well. And that's totally fine.
Of course.
I'll tell you what's the problem with the current fraud mitigation systems. And then I'll tell you how we get to what you're talking about.
Yeah.
The problem with the current fraud mitigation systems is they over-rely on identity verification. Alloy, Socure, Sardine, mm-hmm. whichever one you pick, at the core of it, the emphasis is on we're getting email, phone number, fingerprint, all these different things. We're going to take that attribute, see how well do they conform with the user. And then based on that, we'll tell you what's the likelihood of what they're really telling you is an interpreted score of what's the likelihood of identity theft. But they're conflating that as financial fraud. And then guess what? Give us one-off transaction signals. And then based on yeah. our database in a deterministic way, we'll tell you if this account number has been flagged in our life before.
Right. So there's the endpoints of the transaction yeah. and then there's the pattern of the transaction yeah. and it isn't fitting.
So they're focused so much more on the user corpus
mm-hmm.
that they're not focused as much on the transaction
corpus. Yeah.
Like the transaction work, like life cycle and the life cycle of transactions that the user is doing. A better fraud management system in my mind is something that looks at the transactions and their life cycles
mm-hmm.
and looks at their velocity, their amount, their various secondary features, like is it cash, is it ACH, is it checks? Yeah. Because some instruments are higher risk, some instruments are lower risk, and builds out pretty much a frequency of the customer, if you may, that just tells you, okay, this is the frequency and baseline the customer is most likely transacting on. And now if you extrapolate that a couple of nodes right. down, what does this really look like? Do we lose money? And have we lost money
exactly.
with other customers in a similar setup? And then you can just overlay this customer with other customers and see, is this pattern an outlier to mm-hmm. Yield Street? Or is this pattern conforming with the Yield Street use case? That's the first thing you should
yeah.
do. The second thing you should do is at a global level, see, okay, is this pattern globally flagged as a pattern that has caused
kind
losses
of whatever. Yeah.
to people in other systems? And the third thing you can do is because you can normalize this data and now you have a data pipeline, you can do what Sardine and what Socure and all of them are indirectly trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the unique identifier of the sender and the receiver and look into your system and be like, have they been flagged before for some other activity?
This is exactly where kind of like a collaborative approach between like being able to do it and identify pattern violations on a single platform basis like ours, which we are doing, and we constantly evolve that. But it's largely heuristic because we know what is a healthy pattern, we know what's not. Yeah. Doing it at a macro level is where actually we can partner with infrastructure companies like Synapse. It's like, okay, you have a much broader view into this user's overall money movement patterns. Tell us. And I think I believe you're working on a product like that, so which is great.
Yeah. We have this new product going into private beta. We're going to use it.
Waiting for it
and give us feedback by end of this month, which we call fraud score, and all it's trying to do is trying to predict this and then based on that either keeps the user green, yellow, or red.
And red, you're doing this across the multiple tenancies for the same
all three things that I described.
That's great. I think that's a company in and of itself, if you ask me.
That's a company in itself. The only issue is that company would have to convince enough fintech companies to start sending a transaction data of all different instruments until it gets good. So I get it. It's like a hard, like standalone company to build.
It's a multi-billion node graph that you need to actually build the intelligence on. So we're coming up on our time, but so I'm going to, let me put you on the spot for one thing. What's one flat file that you would come up with yourself for a purpose that it doesn't yet exist for? That was a very weirdly framed question.
What is the one flat file I will come up with? I will come up with a batch NFT flat file.
Okay.
I want to be able to create NFTs in a batch.
Well, the file itself will be tokenized as NFT. So it would definitely be hilarious, weird recursive stuff happening there. All right, one prediction. On this day in 2025, what's the value of Bitcoin?
Oh my gosh. What is the value of Bitcoin today?
I don't know. Was it like 39, 38, something like that?
I don't know. We need that answer.
Let's say it's 38K. I think it's roughly around there. Maybe it's 37.
Here's what's hard about predicting the value of Bitcoin in 5 years. There's no real reason for it to have any value.
This is why it's all a crapshoot.
Like, it's anyone's guess. Like, I suspect it's going to go up.
Oh, it's 43K today. So it's gone up already.
I think it's going to go up. I don't know. Now I'm just like 100K.
All right. Well,
either 100K or nothing.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's the swing. Some people I ask, like, is it going to be around? And it's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure it'll be around.
The only issue with Bitcoin that I see, and I haven't been able to rationalize a good explanation out of it, even with Lightning, Bitcoin is unable to do secondary applications, which Ethereum can, Solana can.
Yeah.
Solana is very cheap and fast. Ethereum's getting there with L2.
Yep.
Then why Bitcoin? That's the first piece I don't get. Because in my mind, a blockchain is like a utility. It's going to be like electricity, right? And then companies will be built on top of it. And this is the first time in the history of humanity that you get to buy shares in the utility. You cannot buy shares in electricity.
Yeah.
You can buy shares in crypto. Great. But when I look at it from that lens, Bitcoin has no utility application on top of it.
I mean, to me, it's a reference implementation for the underlying technology,
which
suddenly has taken off.
Which is better implemented with Ethereum and better implemented with Solana.
Now.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Full disclosure, I don't own any of it. So I'm even not saying this because I want to pump something. So.
That's actually an important thing to do. Thank you. I don't even know. I didn't even know what Solana was until now.
Oh, Solana's great.
Yeah.
I would actually say, I would bet Solana would be far more valuable than it is today in the next 5 years. Far more. Maybe more than Ethereum.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to write that down.
Yeah.
All right, Sankey, that was awesome. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
There are many more tech talks left for us to do either with Yield Street or others. So looking forward to those. And everyone, thanks for tuning in. This was our first Tech Talk of 2022 with Sankey Pathak, founder and CEO of Synapse. Just to remind our viewers, do remember to go to yieldstreet.com to check our currently open offerings. And we have a few more launching this week as well, including some pretty exciting ones. And originators, please write to us at originations@yieldstreet.com and we can help you raise some capital very efficiently. And that's it for us. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Yield. For the latest updates on the alternative investing space, go to yieldstreet.com. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. If you enjoyed the show, feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, as this will help other investors like yourself find our show. If you have any questions, please visit us at yieldstreet.com. Thanks again for listening, and see you next week. The Yield Street podcast you just heard only reflects the opinions of the host, who is an associated person of Yield Street, and does not necessarily reflect the views of Yield Street or any of its affiliates or other associates. The podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be and should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security, and is not an offer or sale of any securities or investment product. The podcast is also not a research report and is not intended to be and should not be construed as investment advice.
Support for this podcast comes from Yield Street. Trying to time the stock market can lead to regret. At Yield Street, our alternative investments are designed to create predictable secondary income streams, providing you with tools to help put your money to work immediately. These investments in asset classes like art, real estate, and legal finance typically have low correlation with the stock market and target annual yields up to 7 to 10%. Welcome to the next generation of investing. Welcome to Yield Street. Sign up today at yieldstreet.com.